The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Your Huddle Podcast. I'm your host, Sammy Jacobs. TJ Inman will be along with us shortly. Today we are recapping Indiana's 24-17 win over the Rutgers Scarlet Knights in Piscataway this Saturday. And we will preview Indiana's trip to Columbus to face number 3-ranked Ohio State Buckeyes on Saturday. We'll go over what we liked, what we didn't like, causes for concern in the Rutgers. And what we think is going to happen in the Ohio State game, what IU needs to do to keep momentum going forward for the rest of the season in their quest to become bowl eligible. TJ, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing well, yeah. It's certainly felt like fall there for about a week, back to a little bit more like summer this week. But it was nice to have a weekend where you didn't sweat walking outside.
Yeah, well, you weren't sweating if you weren't watching the IU game. You got a little hairy there at the end. And it's just a win. They were up 24-7 at halftime. The offense is clicking. The defense played pretty well outside of that one mistake on the opening drive. You felt good. And then it's like they didn't show up in the second half. Ended that game 24-17. It's another second-half shutout for Indiana. They were shut out in the second half of the Virginia game. And it left you with a sour taste. This is a game maybe IU was overlooking Rutgers a little bit, felt safe with the 24-7 lead, sat on that lead and said, let's go take the fourth win and go on to Ohio State. But what are some of your takeaways from the game on Saturday?
Well, I think first and foremost, we have to keep in mind Indiana did win on Saturday. It didn't end up kind of feeling like it after the game because of how poor the second half was in a lot of aspects. But they did win, and ultimately what you're left with is a 4-1 start after the month of September. And, that's a positive. So let's get that out of the way. Just in terms of the game, I thought the first half was pretty good. You had the penalty, the roughing the passer on the first drive, which extended Rutgers. It would have been a 3-and-out, an ideal start. They didn't even get a yard prior to that penalty. But then you've got the roughing the passer and Damian Willis. Rutgers capitalizes on it, scores. It puts Indiana down 7-0. IU's first drive was aided by Rutgers penalties. You get on the board at 7-7. Let's settle down here. And then Indiana gets ahead at 21-7 and then hits field goal, which, props to Logan Justice. That was a very, very nice kick from him. And you get to 24-7 at the half. I was surprised by how little Indiana was handing it off. Stevie Scott's not had very many, traditional carries in that contest. I was mildly surprised by that. But, the passing game was working pretty well in that first half. And the defense overall, I thought, did well, particularly, when Sikowski was pressured. There was really nothing going on for that Rutgers offense. The second half starts, and it's just, as you said, it's like they didn't show up. It was a sleepwalk in the second half, almost as if they were just, waiting for the clock to expire so they could leave. There wasn't much positive going on. And really, for most of, for that third quarter, Rutgers didn't have anything positive going on either. Really, their offense didn't do anything that third quarter. IU's offense didn't do anything that third quarter. It was entirely dull, and just, 15 minutes passing, really. without anything happening. So, you know, fourth quarter gets going, and that's when things kind of really started to fall apart. Stevie Scott has a fumble. I know he fumbled on back-to-back plays technically. I thought the first play he was down, I thought, but either way, you know, he fumbles, loses the ball. Rutgers takes advantage of it. Rutgers gets a field goal, and, you know, you have a possession where IU's forced to, run a pretty odd play where they force Rutgers, or Rutgers chooses to jump off sides, kind of epitomizing why they're a bad football team. And Indiana wisely takes advantage of it, throws deep, and one of the rare vertical passing plays that IU's offense had, gets first down and win the game. Overall takeaways, I didn't think the defense was poor. I thought overall they were fine. Definitely left some opportunities on the field, plays that they could have intercepted if they did not, or plays that they could have gotten sacked if they did not. But still, I thought they played okay. I thought the offense was ridiculously conservative in the second half. I didn't think that they were nearly aggressive enough in a situation where they could have just, with one score in the third quarter, could have really just ended Rutgers' day. I don't think there would have been any type of comeback. That game would not have been the least bit stressful if IU even just put 7 on the board in the third quarter with one successful drive. I'm a little worried about the offensive line's run blocking. They were far from dominant in that area on Saturday. And then I think you have to be somewhat concerned with IU's inability to stretch the field vertically. It's just not there right now. And you've got guys like Nick Westbrook and Donovan Hale that are largely relegated to somewhat irrelevancy in this attack right now because they are unable to stretch the field vertically with Peyton Ramsey. That's a definite concern going against better defenses coming up.
Yeah, and to go back to Rutgers, I thought the offensive line early on played okay. Later on when Rutgers stacked the box, it seemed that they didn't play as well. Tom Allen said that there were some communication issues, getting signals in, getting signals correct along the offensive line, and that kind of communication, which for a veteran offensive line who's been together for 3 or 4 years, that's just not a good look. And maybe that goes on the coaching staff and all that. We've seen this team run better than they did last year, but Rutgers is the worst defense in the Big Ten, and they barely squeaked out 163 yards, and we'll see. A lot of that was Peyton Ramsey just taking balls up the middle and scrambling. I thought that the play call, another play call that people were complaining about was the 4th and 8 or 4th and 9 from the 18-yard line. In the red zone, a field goal makes it 13. Touchdown puts you up 17. Touchdown, 17. Or a touchdown puts you 13. I don't know. I forgot what it was. It would have been 27.
No, you were right.
27-14. Yeah. Okay. Whatever it was, a touchdown really would have sealed it. A field goal. Makes it a 13-point game and really doesn't it's still 2 touchdowns to beat you. And Tom Allen is, I don't know what study he cites when they do that, but you go back to that Michigan State game last year where they kicked the field goal to go up 6 and the touchdown beat them, and that's ultimately what happened. So, you know, you'll see in itself, it was a wheel route to Jayshon Harris. It kind of looked like a fade at the end, but it was a wheel route. It was just poorly thrown.
He gave the receiver no chance to make a play. And, you know, you like the aggressiveness in it. Should they probably have kicked the field goal? Maybe. But it really didn't make a difference. But it's just that throw was awful on that. I thought Peyton Ramsey, he played well, 300 total yards of offense, played well enough. But again, as you said, they're not stretching the field vertically. They're wasting out Nick Westbrook, Donovan Hale, guys like that. Ty Fogle had a touchdown wiped out. And he continues to lollipop these throws. Well, yeah, he's completing 65, 70% of them, but that's not going to get the job done. You're supposed to complete 65 to 70% of your five-yard passes. They got to get the deep passing game going if they're ever going to get these defenses to loosen up and, you know, give your offensive line some help in getting guys out of the box. That, I think, is a big deal. And there were guys running open. I don't know if you saw him, TJ, but you saw a couple times Ty Freifogel and others were running open downfield, and he just locks onto a receiver that's usually a check down guy or something short across the middle and gets him there. So Indiana's got to take some shots here. Got to get some shots here downfield to loosen up that defense. We've lost TJ for a minute, so I will go on a little bit more about the Rutgers game. Anytime you win on the road, it's nice, but this one left you with that sour taste in your mouth, and he's lucky to be 4-1. That was a game where, you know, you really could have came out, put 40 points on the board. I felt good, got some of your younger guys in on offense, maybe see Michael Penix there, which the situation with Penix, I'm starting to feel that the red shirt is coming. And I think that big mistake, TJ, is redshirting Michael Penix. I had a chance to put him in 24/7. It's a fairly stress-free environment as far as playing in a Big Ten game goes. He had a chance to play him in Virginia in a little bit more of a stressful environment. He had a chance to play him against Michigan State in a stressful environment. At some point, they're going to have to make a decision. Right now, I think that decision is to redshirt Michael Penix, which I think is not a good decision. It's at Indiana, we've said it, TJ, all summer, is that they need to be aggressive. And this is not the aggressive move. The aggressive move would to be play a two-quarterback system. I think these two guys complement each other really well. Peyton Ramsey has shown that he could lead this offense pretty easily. He's a threat running the ball. He could throw it enough to where he's effective. But to get to that next level, you're going to need Michael Penix's big arm in there and stretch that field. So what are your feelings on Michael Penix?
Well, I think the large concern game sample remaining in this season where the question is, should Michael Penix play or not? And that would be Iowa, Minnesota, Maryland, and Purdue. Can you beat two of those four teams or more? You know, it has to be at least two. Can you beat at least two of those teams in order to get to six wins with only Peyton Ramsey? I don't know if the answer to that question is yes. I can tell you I would feel more confident in things if Michael Penix were a part of the offense. And for me, if the coaching staff agrees with that sentiment, then the answer has to be you play Michael Penix as a part of the offense. I'm not suggesting he should be the full-time quarterback because I don't. He's clearly in the coaching staff's top minds, which, you know, that's the one that matters. I mean, they've seen him far more than we have. He's not ready for that responsibility, but we've seen him as a part of the game plan, and I think he's shown enough to be ready for those games. And, yeah, I think he he needs to be a part of it if Indiana is going to reach back to the bowl game. I hope I'm wrong about that. It doesn't look like that's part of the plan. But you know, I think Indiana is going to need some really good defensive performances if they're going to beat Iowa, Maryland, Minnesota, and Purdue. If they're going to beat those four teams, they're going to need the defense to be really, really good, because I personally don't think the offense will be putting up large point totals without a vertical passing game against those defenses. Particularly, Iowa's defense is going to be really difficult to score on those guys with threat to stretch the field. And then you factor in, obviously, Penn State, Michigan, and Ohio State are still left on the schedule. I mean, good luck moving the ball on those teams when they know if they feel that you can't throw it more than 10 yards down the field accurately. Good luck, because if they have eight guys in the box, the offensive line has no chance.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. Now, those are all toss-up games according to ESPN's FPI.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I do. I agree with that.
With IU being slight favorites in all three of them. Yeah. IU is slight favorites according to FPI in all three of those, the Minnesota, Maryland, and Purdue game, and two of those at home. So, you know, they're toss-up games. You don't have to make it this hard on yourself. You have a chance to go get, you know, a win against Iowa and a win against Minnesota and enter November not needing a win against your biggest rival at the end of the year or a win against a dangerous Maryland team to go to a bowl game. You know, at some point, IU's got to make it easy on themselves, and they just haven't done that. I like Tom Allen. I think he's the right guy for the job. He's going to go the way Bill Mallory, if he doesn't change his mindset of, hey, I'm in charge of this team, we got to be aggressive, we have to roll the dice. If something's not working, if we're being too conservative, because if he doesn't go to a bowl game this year, that momentum's dead in the water. Soon that pipeline to Florida is going to dry up, because you could only sell family so much, win games and go to bowl games, and that pipeline might dry up, and when that dries up, you're back to being a cellar dweller and could be, you know, battling Rutgers and Illinois and school for the bottom of the Big Ten. And that's not good for a program who needs momentum, who needs financial support from the alumni to build up these facilities that other schools are built to keep pace. Otherwise, you're going to fall behind again, and it's going to be very difficult to climb out of that hole. Now, I don't think Tom Allen's on the hot seat. He signed a 6-year deal. I believe that's what it was. But at some point, he's got to start winning games, and he has a wonderful opportunity to do that this year. He has a good team, and what's holding him back is the quarterback play. And I will talk until I'm blue in the face about completion percentage and how it's almost a meaningless stat. You look at Trace McSorley. Trace McSorley is not a great completion percentage guy, but he's the best quarterback in the Big Ten, arguably. And
yeah,
it's because he throws the ball downfield to his receivers, and they go up and get it. Sure, he throws interceptions, but you know what? Peyton Ramsey has thrown 5 interceptions this year, and they've been some costly picks. A pick 6, a pick on the opening drive against FIU, pick in the end zone against Rutgers, a bad throw against Virginia, and another one against Michigan State when you're trying to come back. So this whole, he takes care of the ball, completes 70% of his passes. Well, great. Guess what? You're throwing for 5 yards, 6-7 yards a throw and a 10, which isn't good enough, in my opinion. You know, Trace McSorley's completed 52.9% of his passes, but he throws it downfield, and he's thrown it less times, and he's got 1,049 yards. And then you look at Dwayne Haskins, who's up above 70%, but he's thrown for 1,400 yards. He's
you know, Ohio State fans wanted him to play, and as good as JT Barrett was, and I'm not comparing Ramsey to JT Barrett, because JT Barrett was a hell of a football player. But his inability to stretch the field at those receivers cost Ohio State some wins and some big games. And that's what I think the comparison there is. You got a guy sitting on the bench who has a cannon for an arm, who could stretch the field and has shown you he could stretch the field. You're playing it a little too conservative for 2021. And if you're playing for 2021, nobody's going to coach at Indiana then.
Yeah, I don't disagree with any of that. I do think, you know, I think Peyton Ramsey has had a pretty good season. I think his legs are an asset. I think he has done a nice job of extending plays and making plays with his legs. And I do think that Mike DeBoard has done a better job of using that part of Ramsey's game than we saw last season. So that's a positive. And I do think that Peyton Ramsey has, you know, he's done a good job of doing what the offense has asked him to thus far. So, you know, I don't want to I hope we're not coming across, at least I'll speak for myself only, I hope we're not coming across as too overly negative of what he has done so far, because he has helped lead Indiana to a 4-1 start, you know, which in my opinion, I know that the optics of Saturday's game were not good, particularly that second half. But, you know, as a longtime IU football fan, I can say that I certainly won't scoff at 4-1, you know, with a couple of good victories mixed in there. They haven't beaten just, you know, State Directional U and, you know, and Little Sisters of the Poor. I mean, there's a couple of good wins in there. They've had a good start to the season, and the September was realistically just about as good as you could hope for overall. So, I think that that's something for to be recognized and on the positive side of things. But I do agree with you that for Indiana to have as good a season as possible, which, of course, is the goal, you know, to reach your potential as a team, you know, I think that there needs to be that additional element on offense. And if you don't get that from Peyton Ramsey, and if Michael Penix is not going to play, they have to find another way to have, you know, big explosive plays. And I'm not sure what that would be, but, you know, you've got to have that in your offense. You will not be able to beat good defenses consistently. You'll score here and there, sure, but you won't be able to score consistently on good defenses just picking up 4 or 5 yards on passes and the occasional, you know, 12 to 15-yard slants across the middle. That stuff will dry up real quick against really good defenses. So, you know, I think that's where we're at with it. Overall, really good start, a lot to be positive about. But certainly some things to be concerned about as well as we head to October. So I'm very pleased with where the program's at and where I also have to recognize what we feel is a, you know, big concern heading forward.
Yeah, you sign up for a 4-1 start and you kind of get a little spoiled with what could have been and what's the unknown sitting on the sideline, but 4-1 is as good as anybody could ask for. You had a shot at 5-0, but 4-1 realistically, if you would have told IU fans at the beginning of the year you're going to be 4-1 heading into Ohio State, they would have signed up for it. All right, heading
and,
into
and if you
would
have told if you would have told the like national media, that would have been far exceeding expectations. Because, I mean, I think right now you're just almost at the ceiling of what most national people thought this team would be.
Yeah, and a lot of national outlets said 4-8, 3-9, something along those lines, maybe a 5-7 or 6-6, you know, which was the rare call. But let's dive into Ohio State a little bit. Game, IU's 27-point underdogs going into this. Ohio State's coming off a big win in Happy Valley. It's a team that is now number three in the nation, has national title aspirations, is, you know, always cognizant of the Hoosiers coming in since they've given them fits the last couple of years. So Ohio State's not going to take Indiana lightly. To me, this game is you know, just survive it for Indiana. You have a tough game against Iowa coming up at home. You got a few guys banged up that you'll need back at Watt Fillier, Luke Timian, Jacob Robinson, to name you. Sean Riggins didn't play last week as well. Get those guys healthy. If it were me, I would hold them out a little bit, you know, just to get everybody healthy for Iowa. You could hit that game at 100%. Just get out of Columbus healthy. Don't get embarrassed. Don't lose 63-3 or something like that. Put forth your best effort. Keep guys healthy, and head into Iowa 4-2. That might be a defeatist way to look at it, but you know, let's be realistic. IU hasn't won at Ohio State since 1987. They haven't beaten Ohio State since 1988, and I don't think this is the year to do it. And especially coming off that win at Rutgers, which was just less inspiring. But get guys healthy. You get WAP, if you could get WAP back for Iowa, if you could get Luke Timian back for Iowa, you know, you feel pretty good about your chances into that game. What are your thoughts going into Ohio State?
It's a really bad matchup, first and foremost. You know, the one spot where you feel like Ohio State might have some vulnerability would be their secondary. I didn't think it looked particularly good against Penn State. I think that Penn State was really missing the play calling of Joe Moorhead, because I feel like they, in my opinion, they took the foot off the gas there in the third and fourth quarter and allowed the Buckeyes to get on their get back on their toes defensively, and just that little bit of a breath was all Ohio State needed to seize back momentum and take that game back over and eventually win it. It was a great game, but you know, the one vulnerability they might have would be that secondary. Trace McSorley was tearing it apart, and it's an area that Indiana, I don't think it's, as we discussed, you know, extensively here, it's not something that IU has really proven to be able to exploit so far this year. So I don't know how IU's offense is going to be able to consistently move the ball on Ohio State, and I think it's going to put the Hoosiers defense in a lot of bad positions where they're going to be asked to make stops on short fields or, you know, with poor field position, or just get tired and worn down by having to be on the field too much. Dwayne Haskins, obviously, you know, is a big plus for the Buckeyes at quarterback, and their receivers, I thought, did a pretty good job of actually making some plays for themselves. It's a position group that has been kind of picked at over the last few seasons for kind of an inability to make big plays out of, you know, maybe short bubble screens or quick slants, just a kind of a lack of explosion from that unit. But they provided some of that Saturday night. And then, of course, they have Dobbins and Weber, which are, you know, a good 1-2 punch at tailback. So I think IU's defense is up to the challenge of, you know, putting up some resistance against Ohio State. But I anticipate this being a game where they just wear down, and because IU's offense will not be able to consistently move it against the Buckeyes, and their pass rush is going to really be an issue. You know, Michigan State's defensive line is very good, and it gave IU's offensive line fits, and I think we're probably going to see a lot of the same on Saturday.
Yeah, this is a very good Ohio State team who's carrying the banner for the Big Ten.
It's probably the Big Ten's best shot to get to the college football playoff. They get Michigan at home. They already beat Penn State. They got to go to Michigan State. Other than that, their schedule sets up well to go 12-0, and we'll see. You know, Dwayne Haskins has a big time arm, can run it when he needs to. It's going to be a little different of a Ohio State offense, as we've seen in the past with JT Barrett running that read option. And a lot of times in the past that JT Barrett has had to run the ball 25 times against IU to pull out the win. But Ohio State has two very good running backs, J.K. Dobbins and Mike Weber. They're both around 300 yards-ish rushing. They're home hitters. They could score from anywhere on the field. Paris Campbell has come into his own as a wide receiver. He's one of the fastest guys in college football. He could score from anywhere on the field. Their special teams are solid. It's a good opportunity for IU. It's going to be on national television at 4 o'clock on Fox. But it's a game where you just – don't want anybody to get hurt. Sit there and you watch and you say just get through this game healthy. Get to Iowa and you're past. You're already out. Now you're done with half of the Big Four in the Big Ten East, and you're sitting at 4-2, which is it's good enough. And then this is a tough October for IU. You got Ohio State on the road, Iowa at home, Penn State at home, and then on a short week you go to Minnesota, and that wraps up October. So it's a tough start to October. I wouldn't be too discouraged if Indiana lost this game 42-13 or 42-10 or something like that. Get some guys some big time experience and just get out healthy, because if a couple important guys get banged up, it makes Iowa a little bit tougher, makes Penn State a little bit tougher, and it sure makes Minnesota a lot tougher. And then you go into November needing to win 2 out of 3. And it's all last year getting 3 in a row in November. Those are always tough games. And I know Purdue will like nothing else but to keep IU out of the postseason 2 years in a row. And they're probably – if Jeff Brohm has them bowling this year, it would be a big surprise after that 0-3 start in their schedule coming up.
Yeah.
So they could be sitting at 6-7 losses there. But they're going to be fired up. If their attitude is probably, if we can't go to bowl, IU sure as hell not going to bowl either. So they'll be fired up and playing hard for that game. And you saw their it wasn't a revenge game against Nebraska, but Nebraska put some bulletin board material out there, and I think Purdue's players took it to heart. So they're going to play hard for Coach Brohm, but we'll see.
Good.
No, but we'll see. Yeah, but when Scott Frost says this is a winnable game, probably the most winnable game or something like that, it's not going to go over well with Purdue. And credit to Purdue, they went in there and kick their ass, but we'll see. Their schedule coming up is mighty difficult. They're on a bye week this week, and then they get Illinois, or they have Illinois this week and a bye week. But they still have to play Ohio State at home, at Michigan State, Iowa at home, and Wisconsin at home, and they have to go to Minnesota and Indiana. We'll see where Purdue is, but just get out of this game against Ohio State healthy. Put forth a good effort, a good fight. Maybe, empty the bag a little bit in terms of trick plays. Put some things on tape. You have nothing to lose in this game. You're 27-point underdogs. If Peyton Ramsey throws it deep and he gets picked off, big deal. It's not a big deal. But it'd be good to see him throw it deep against a secondary who kind of got beat up. They're going to be missing, I think, Isaiah Pryor for the first half of this game, and Arnett is banged up and things like that. So if there's a chance to get some big plays, some momentum plays like that,
and you have some receivers who can make those plays, go throw it up. What I'll be very surprised is if I see Michael Penix this week, I'm going to be shocked. I might fall out of the press box. If Michael Penix comes in this week, if it's not for injury, if Peyton Ramsey gets banged up, I'm sure you'll see Penix, but we'll see. Predictions on the game?
Well, I predict pain. Just kidding. Ohio State obviously is going to win. I think this would be, if Indiana were to win on Saturday, it would be one of the more shocking results in college football history, to be honest with you. I'll say Ohio State to win 48. I think the Hoosiers get a couple of scores. I'll say 48-17. So I guess Ohio State would cover in that scenario. There are zero expectations, and there's not a whole lot to take out of this game, in my opinion. I think we'll probably, watch it. We will certainly observe and hopefully glean some things from some guys to maybe take some individual performances out of it and take some larger things out of it. But my guess would be, my hope would be that everybody stays healthy and that we simply, chalk it up as a loss and move forward right away to thinking about a much more winnable game and a big matchup against Iowa, a team that the more that I've watched them, the more that I'm convinced they have a terrific defense that does have some flaws, though, and they have an offense that really lacks firepower right now. That's a game that initially before the season you looked at and said, that's going to be a tough one to get, and it still will, but it is winnable. Whereas this Saturday, I don't see that as being the case. I think Ohio State's going to the college football playoff. I think at Penn State will be just about as impressive a win as anybody in the country ends up with. And that's certainly one they should be proud of. They'll probably kind of sleepwalk through parts of this game against Indiana, but I think that they will build a significant lead before doing so.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with you on that one, TJ. I'm gonna take Ohio State 45, Indiana 13. IU just doesn't have the firepower to score more than that against this Ohio State team. At least that's what they've shown us so far this year. And I'll go back to it again. If Mike DeBoard has things hidden away, what are you waiting for? And that's what it kind of seemed like after the Purdue game last year was like, we didn't leave it all on the field. And that's what was disappointing. And that's kind of what it's trending to this year. It's like you're leaving bullets in the chamber. And Indiana needs to fire all the bullets they have to get six wins. It's not going to be this week. I'll be ecstatic if they shock the world, but I'm going to go 45-13 Ohio State. Just get out of this one healthy. Move on to homecoming. You should have a nice crowd for homecoming. You're still 4-2, and your two losses to the top, top 15 teams or top 20 teams in the country, and that's nothing to be that upset about. That's going to do it. The game kicks off at 4:00 on Fox. A late afternoon game. I think it's Indiana's first game on Fox since the Foster Farms Bowl. So we'll see. Maybe it'll be a Gus Johnson game, but we'll see. So tune in on Fox at 4:00. Come back to HoosierHuddle.com for all your analysis. We do have some good features coming up on young defensive backs. IU's offense spreading the ball around to a whole bunch of receivers, which is good to see. And Raekwon Jones stepping up, becoming a vocal leader on the field and in the locker room for this team. Follow us on Twitter at Hoosier_Huddle. T
TJ, as always, thanks for joining me.
Absolutely. Thanks, everybody. Have a good week.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I want to tell you a story. It's a story about a scandal, broken relationships, gossip, rumors, money, corporate rivalry, and a broom. A performance-enhancing broom. My name is John Cullen. I'm a comedian, podcaster, and for 20 years, I was a semi-professional curler. And I want to tell you the story about how a single broom almost imploded the 500-year-old sport of curling.
We felt like we were bringing a knife to a gunfight.
It's the story of a superstar and his fall from grace.
Oh, I was being dragged through the mud.
It's the story of two brother entrepreneurs with a dream.
Yeah, I said, that's great news.
It's a story of intrigue.
I still don't understand why we want to keep his name secret.
The full story has never been told, so I'm going to tell it. Broomgate, how a broom almost killed curling.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
To listen to Broomgate, search for Broomgate in your favorite podcast app. That's all one word, Broomgate.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. Welcome to Fail Better, David Duchovny's new podcast with Lemonada Media. On Fail Better, David, who has experienced both low and high-profile failures throughout his life, explores the vast world of failure, how it holds us back, propels us forward, and ultimately shapes our lives. Each week, he'll chat with guests like Ben Stiller, Bette Midler, and more about how our perceived failures have actually been our biggest catalysts for growth, revelation, and even healing. Through these conversations, he hopes listeners can learn how to embrace the opportunity of failure and fail better together. Fail Better is out now wherever you get your podcasts.